Welcome to another amazing episode of Stargazer. Today, it is a great pleasure to introduce you all to Marlena Seven Bremner, who just wrote the most amazing book, Hermetic Philosophy and Creative Alchemy, The Emerald Tablet, The Corpus Hermeticum, and The Journey Through the Seven Spheres. Thank you so much for being here, Marlena. This stuff is right up my alley. This is all very near and dear to my heart. So I am thrilled to have you here. Thank you for coming.
That's great to hear. Thank you so much for having me, Rachel. It's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Well, you are one of those experiences that just dropped out of the sky for me. You know, I'm minding my own business and I get an email and somebody from Inner Traditions, Manzanita, shout out to Manzanita. She was kind enough to connect me with you and send me your book. And what a gift. You know, I feel so grateful to have had this book sent to me in the mail and be able to talk to you about it. This is seriously a dream come true because I also am obsessed with Hermeticism. I'm also on this path in my own way. And I've been doing this work for a really long time, full time and professionally for 7 years. I've worked as an astrologer and I've been teaching classes on alchemy. And I just want to know, how did this all start for you? How did you find your way to the hermetic path? Were you born into it? Did you find it? I want to know the story.
I've thought about this a lot because, you know, in the linear timeline of my life and experience, I definitely wasn't born into it. And I didn't really start learning about hermetics and alchemy until my 20s. Wow. But I feel like as a kid, I think I had an awareness of things that sort of led me on the path, you know? And so maybe that forgetfulness that we all kind of bring with us into each new life, that was there, but there was some sort of imprinted memory, you know? Like I remember as a kid being really interested, or at least as a teenager, between like the balance of the opposites and the sun and the moon. And that made a lot of appearances in my early artwork as a kid. And this idea of the union of the opposites and creativity that comes through that. So I feel like in a way Hermeticism has always been with me, but technically as a study and a practice, I didn't come into it until a little bit later in my 20s.
I feel that to be so very true, because the thing that I love about Hermeticism is that I feel it is the lens of perception that is most natural. Almost as though it's in our DNA. This is the perception that we were born with. This is the perception of reality that was ordained by the divine. And I feel like it is natural, especially to children. When you're a child, you're not, I heard it described once that childhood is like the complete ouroboric loop, you're whole and complete. And then when you enter adolescence, there's a sort of separation from that, which creates that yearning for another, that yearning for fulfillment, that yearning to grow and to find status and love and all of these things that we need to fill the emptiness. But when you're a child, you're still connected. You're still in that sort of oceanic consciousness where you see the reality of interconnectivity and interdependence, that ecological philosophy is so apparent. And to know that as a young child who was also an artist, so I guess you've been an artist all along, that's another level of your work I want to talk about, but you are sort of naturally an alchemist when you're an artist. And I really feel that way. Like, artists are alchemists. And so to me, it's really interesting that you sort of always knew all of these natural and very real things about reality. But how did you in your 20s actually turn your intuition and your sensibilities about nature into a study? Because you're, and I really need to emphasize this, this book is a very deep and profound scholastic journey. This is really deep and really multifaceted, multi-layered. This is not a quick intro. This is not for a dilettante. This is an incredible work of scholarship. So how did you start your actual studies?
Well, as a teenager, I was really interested in the spiritual realms and very curious to explore that. And so I studied a lot of different things and practiced a lot of different things. from shamanism to looking at Buddhism and meditation, and started a yoga practice when I was 19 that I still have going. And a lot of the Eastern traditions I was interested in, but also like Wicca and paganism. And that informed a lot of my path and sort of guided me. But it wasn't until, I think it was my early 20s, when I was introduced to this form of body work called polarity therapy, which works with the energies of the body and the positive and negative forces of energy to open blockages. And it works with the elements and the chakras, and using both hands on the body and different levels of skilled touch and manipulation and rocking. And it's a really beautiful holistic practice. And I studied it for 5 years. But at the outset, my teacher, she gave me this book that she had written called Somatic Empathy. There was an image in there, and it was this image, which is actually in the book. It's of Mercurius standing nude, and he's holding two caduceus staffs in each hand. And I'd never seen that image before. I'd never seen anything like it before, you know, and it just spoke to me so viscerally and seemed to sort of trigger this memory of something. And that was really, I feel like that was the moment that I was like, I need to understand what this is, where it comes from. And that led me into my explorations of alchemy. And then things just started coming to me. People would bring me books or recommend things, and it all unfolded from there.
Yeah, I know how that goes. That's, wow, that's actually really interesting. I feel like, first of all, getting into alchemy first through the body makes a lot of sense. In fact, that's the same thing that happened to me. Different story, but I learned about alchemy from practicing Qigong. Taoist internal alchemy was the first thing that I ever found. Prior to that, Western alchemy, even though I was way into astrology, Western alchemy was still very, it felt obtuse and obscure and arcane. It felt very distant. It didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't grasp it for some reason. It just was falling through my fingers in one ear, out the other. I couldn't get it until I started doing actual energy work. And then the Taoist internal alchemy, those principles became somatically understood. And as soon as that happened, that foundation actually made it possible for me to take another look at the Western alchemical tradition. And it was like a whole new subject. It was like I had a new mind. Really interesting. And what I also love about your story is the power of that image, the most iconic, one of the most iconic alchemical engravings, and just how potent the image actually is. This is one of the most important principles of alchemy, is the power of true imagination, the potency of an image as a key to open a door of perception, if you will. You know, it's very psychedelic in that way. So amazing. You were initiated by that iconic engraving. I believe it.
Yeah, and by Hermes.
Of course. Oh my God. That's amazing. So now you have been an artist since you were a child. And one of the things that makes your book so special, and I really recommend for listeners who want to read this book, please get the actual hardback book, because I was reading your book on Kindle and it's great. I mean, get the Kindle if you need to get it sooner, but I was waiting for the hardback to arrive. And since it did yesterday, I've been enjoying this book even more. And what's most important is that it's illustrated not only with the iconic alchemical engravings from the old manuscripts, which are beautiful, but also there's full color plates of your exquisite art, and it's really worth seeing in person. It's really worth tripping out on and having the visceral experience. So I just want to hear about your journey as an artist, because you're quite a painter, and I really want to hear about how these paintings came to be.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I did make a lot of art as a kid and as a teenager. And then in my late teens, I started painting, and I got to a certain point where I thought to myself, I'm not really that good. and this isn't really worth my time. So I'm just going to leave art to, like, you know, birthday cards and little gifts for people, and then put my energy into other things, into the healing that I want to learn about. And I didn't come back to painting until I started studying alchemy, interestingly. And I was going through, I've told this story a lot of times, but I was going through a really difficult time, what I would equate to a full-on Negredo experience, you know, the dark night of the soul, underworld journey. And it really lasted like a solid 3 years. And the transformation through it kind of went on for another few years after that. But the way that I found to manage what was going on within me was to paint and to study, mm-hmm. and to apply what I was learning visually in a physical form through the painting. And then the paintings would start to communicate back to me and help reveal things about my unconscious and about these, like, sort of latent patterns that I've just been playing out, you know, and help me to see things more clearly. And then that process could evolve through the work, through each painting and through each successive painting. And that was really how I transformed that dark night of the soul for myself, because I had all these other tools, you know, meditation, yoga, long walks, energy medicine, working with crystals and toning and all, you know, all of the things, and nothing was working. They would actually, like, trigger more anxiety. Meditating and being in a yoga class, I would just have panic attacks. So working in a physical form, like taking what was inside of me and bringing it outside so I could see it, so I could have a conversation with it. That was the way that I was able to transform that energy.
Wow.
And
yeah,
that evolved into, you know, as I was doing that, I was learning all about alchemy and hermeticism, and then my painting started to take on those elements symbolically, you know. And so I could look at a process or be experiencing a process of alchemy and represent that in a painting, and then have that process, like, just unfold in this really beautiful way.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. That's incredible. And such a testament to what art is really supposed to be. Exactly what I said, artists are alchemists, you know? And I love the fact that you described it as a dialogue that you were having with your work. I'm not a visual artist myself. I mean, I'm not gifted at painting or drawing. And I hold myself back from that, but I'm feeling like, just from hearing you say that, like, maybe I should just try, because I can at least communicate with my own unconscious through the visual medium.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like I should probably do that. So thank you for
a good place to start would be with just, like, automatic drawing.
Yeah.
Where you're not concerned with the outcome. You're not trying to create something beautiful for other people to see. Yeah. You're simply engaging with that unconscious part of yourself. Mm. And facilitating a trance state and allowing that to express itself freely, uninhibited, and seeing what results. And oftentimes it's quite surprising what comes out. And I feel like even people without creative talent, you know, they think they don't have talent or whatever, like, that will come through if you just let go and, like, aren't concerned with what's happening.
Yeah, I believe you're absolutely right. But you do have a tremendous amount of talent. I think it's really funny that you have a memory of thinking that you're not very good, because you're actually amazing. I was showing this book to my friends last night, and they were like, "Ooh, ah, wow." I mean, it gets people to gasp. It's so incredible. And I feel like the detail, the amount of detail and the trippy, psychedelic, mystical vision that you have is unique. I've never seen anything quite like it. And yet, you know, when I was looking at your natal chart, mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, you know, you are a Sagittarius extraordinaire.
Oh my God.
Your sun conjunct Neptune and Jupiter as well, you know, the Jupiter sun Neptune conjunction, to me that says just expanded transcendental states, transcendental visionary states that you have access to. And I'm not surprised that you can go this far into inner space and bring it back for others to see. That's really beautiful. And it's one of the things that I love so much about Sagittarian energy is the fact that they hold the torch for others. They don't just survive the underworld, come out the other side and speak of eternal life. They hold that light for others so that people can see it for themselves and find their way to that place as well. And I feel like that's really what this book represents in so many ways. Like, as you said, this is the way that you healed yourself from your dark night of the soul. This is your underworld journey out the other side, which is exactly what Sagittarius represents. You know, it's the sign that follows Scorpio. But that being said, we are Saturn and Scorpio sisters. So we are from the same generation, Saturn and Scorpio, Pluto and Scorpio. And when I was looking at your chart and I saw that you had Venus conjunct Saturn, very middle of Scorpio, 12 degrees. Uh-huh. And of course, the Pluto in Scorpio, which brings you into, you are of the generation that is supposed to do exactly this work. Reclaiming the supposedly proto-scientific superstitions and like reviving these ancient teachings, bringing them into this time to do very necessary healing, very necessary transmutation of the collective consciousness. You know, I really believe that's what the Pluto and Scorpio generation is here to do. But even more so, someone like you that has their Venus and Saturn conjoined in the middle of Scorpio, fixed water, the middle of the sign, it's quite alchemical in and of itself, because the very middle of the underworld, the very middle of that tunnel through the underworld is exactly where death is becoming new life. That is where the transformation is happening. That's where hunger is becoming a magnet for new energy. That is where the death, the vacancy, the hollowness is becoming filled once again by the endless principle of creation, you know, the wheel of life. So you have a very potent alchemical natal chart for sure. And I feel like it's really interesting because Venus normally rules, you know, our artistic sensibilities, our vision of beauty in this world, our connection to our, you know, what we love, what we want to draw to us in this world, what we want to drink deeply of. And to have Venus and Saturn conjoined like that, like exactly, your Venus would be very, it's like weighed down by a lot of gravity. And it really reminds me of, you know, the root chakra, Saturn and the root chakra and the metal lead. Actually holding your Venus captive until you learn how to liberate that energy, until you straight up learn alchemy and actually have a process that will liberate your artistic spirit, liberate your heart and soul, liberate you into this life of beauty. So
yeah,
I'm so happy that you did that for yourself.
It was I had to for survival purposes.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like for me personally, and I think this is the case for a lot of people too, maybe not just related to Venus and Scorpio, but that Venusian energy that longs to create, that longs to express and to, you know, revel in beauty, to show beauty, to, you know, experience beauty. If that is suppressed in some way, if it's not acknowledged and given space to grow and flourish, then it becomes putrid. You know, it's that Scorpio putrefaction and decay, and that's a necessary process, but you know, it can also become really toxic if you're not able to transform that and bring it out into the world in some way.
Exactly. So you have quite a responsibility. You have a lot of gifts, but they require a tremendous amount of work to cultivate them, you know, and all in 12th house, you know, 12th house, the place of the unconscious and the realm of the archetypes and the ancestors. It's a lot of ways to look at that, of course, but, you know, when you're a 12th house person, and I am too, I understand, you need a lot of sanctuary in this life. You're not supposed to be overly involved in the center of things. You're not supposed to be, overexposed to the hyperactivity and the busyness of the world. You're the kind of person that is contemplative, naturally sort of monastic, you know, and having that level of internal sensibilities, that kind of introversion, that kind of contemplative quality of consciousness makes for a tremendous scholar, obviously, a natural mystic. And because it's all in Scorpio, the alchemical path really makes a lot of sense. So I just think it's so fascinating how much people embody their charts. And you in particular are embodying all the best things in your chart at such a high level. So to me, it really speaks of the purpose of alchemy, which is to raise the vibe, essentially. You know, we all have a natal chart, and we're not fated to anything. We have been given a certain energetic hand in this life, but like anything, like any skill, the more you refine it, the better it becomes. And so for me, I really see the fruits of your labors expressed in the work that you're doing, which is so high level. Like, you are definitely a visionary artist and an alchemist. And I was curious as to when you started writing this book, actually, just by transit. I was kind of looking at, you know, Jupiter, the ruler of your chart. I was looking at Jupiter transits and Saturn transits. When did you start writing this book?
I think it really started around 2015.
Wow. Okay.
But it didn't really start coming together as a book for a couple of years after that. But that's when the ideas were coming together, and I was definitely writing a lot and studying a lot and kind of, you know, exploring things through the painting and then taking a lot of notes and putting ideas together about the planets. And it originally started with those planetary chapters. You know, I was just like collecting information, studying, integrating, experiencing, testing things out, experimenting, and then writing about it. Mm-hmm. And it was actually supposed to be, it's two books. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there's a second book that comes out next year. Mm-hmm. And that one's called The Hermetic Marriage of Art and Alchemy.
Cool.
And they were originally supposed to be one book, which would have been massive. And when I got the publishing deal, they asked me to make it into two, and they really worked better as two separate books anyway. So it was a good thing. But yeah, it was quite a massive project, and I'm still recovering from it, I feel like.
I definitely could imagine. You know, I had high expectations because this woman, Manzanita, that sends me these books always chooses the best books. I've never been disappointed. So I had very high expectations, but this surpassed even those. You know, it's one of those delightful moments where you're like, I could not have imagined how good this book really is going to be. It's so good. I've read a lot of books on alchemy and hermeticism and obviously astrology. And like, I love the Hellenistic world. I love ancient mythology. I love everything that you wove into this book. And it's special the way that you syncretized this narrative, you know, this history, the many layers that go into this study is unique. And I really appreciated that. And it's interesting to me that you started this in 2015 and that it's come to fruition now. That makes perfect sense in terms of Saturn transits. Saturn being, in my opinion, the most alchemical placement in your chart, Saturn and Scorpio in the 12th. So you started this during the Saturn return. And then it came to fruition at the Saturn square, which is exactly correct. I mean, that's in total alignment. But when did you get the publishing deal? Just out of curiosity.
That would have been 2019, I believe, or early 2020.
Wow. Yes.
And I had just moved out to the desert, which is where I live now, and from Olympia. And this goes back to something you were saying earlier about being inclined to like a monastic life away from the hustle and bustle. Like, my life in Washington up near Seattle was just crazy. It was like too much for me to handle. I was having art shows like multiple times a month, and like trying to do poetry at the markets on the weekends. And it was insane. So I moved to the desert to have space to finish these books. And then I got the publishing deal shortly after that. So yeah, it felt very in alignment.
So like it was basically this really got going, like the focus, concentration to create this book out of that very long period of study and experimentation and creation. When Saturn was right on the edge of Capricorn and Aquarius, and it really got going when Saturn moved into Aquarius, which was when Saturn moved into your third house of writing. So there you go. It's amazing. Like, what interesting timing. I'm just fascinated by this.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how the timing works out with things. And, you know, I'll find myself like just filled with inspiration suddenly, and I haven't been paying attention to where the transits are or whatever, you know? And so I go to the studio and then later I look at the transits and I'm like, oh my God, this like matched up perfectly. Like it's always amazing to me.
Yeah, I am. I was really tripped out by that. It's so cool. And yeah, a long time coming though. So there's so much in this book, but I just want to talk about a couple things you said in the introduction, which I think are really important. You asked the question, like, are we on the precipice of a hermetic revival in this age? And I mean, I really believe the answer is yes, but I want to hear some of your thoughts off the cuff. Are we on the precipice of a hermetic revival in this day and age?
I feel like it's very possible. Yeah. I feel like what I see in the world, what I see in people that I meet that are drawn to me, and not just that, but in media, things that are coming out and TV series, things like that, which if you pay attention to, it's really interesting to see like mythological themes and themes about dreams and imagination and sort of like opening up this world of potential for humanity and planting the seeds. And I think if you really look, there's a lot of indications that yes, we are in a sort of revival of sorts. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes sense with how depraved things are becoming and how, you know, challenging the world is at the moment for so many of us. It makes sense that we would be longing for something more to give us meaning and to give us hope and a sense of like possibility, and that, you know, we're not just at the mercy of these forces around us, but that we do have some agency, creative agency, to imagine a better world, and that the imagination really is the starting place for change.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, there have been a lot of hermetic revivals throughout history. But the most recent one that I consider valid, I mean, you could make arguments, I guess, but, you know, during the Renaissance, when Marsilio Ficino actually translated the hermetic corpus into Latin, and he was responsible for the philosophical explosion and the artistic explosion, simply because he gave an entire civilization access to this wisdom again. And what's interesting is that time has a lot of correlations with this time. It's a time of heavy corruption in the totalitarian, authoritarian state. At the time, it was the church. It's no longer the church. It's now science and government, but same idea, same people. There was an information age exploding, because that's the era when the Gutenberg printing press was making it possible to disseminate information at a speed and in volume that had never been even imagined before. And so there's a lot of correlations with what we're experiencing now. And there was a very short period, and it was a bit of a pipe dream, but, you know, Ficino and his ilk, they had serious designs to get Hermes Trismegistus made into a saint, like legitimized, canonized as a saint in the Catholic Church. And there was movement towards it. It was not a total no. It was not a complete and total antagonistic response. There was this warming up of the hermetic current, even in the Christian theology of the time. But what really put the stop on that was the Reformation. And it's interesting because we're in a time that's very similar to that as well. So there's so much strife and we really can't see which way things are turning. But what I think is so interesting is how warmed up people are becoming once again to this wisdom, just as they were in the Renaissance. And I do find that to be a very positive thing, even though we don't know how it's going to go, even though we don't have any way to predict exactly how the chips are going to fall. I do feel like this time can result in a renaissance of sorts. And certainly because there is more autonomy in terms of information access, I don't know if it can actually be stopped, because we don't need Hermes Trismegistus to be canonized anymore. You know, we're canonizing Hermes. Like, like the Aquarian age, if you will. And I'm not trying to argue that it's begun or that it's starting in 20 years. I don't know when the Aquarian age begins officially. There's so much disagreement on that. But what we do see is an era where there's going to be a lot more value put on ideas, intellect, spirit, the etheric level of consciousness, the element of air. And there's also this quality of autonomy and sovereignty versus dependence and subservience. You know, the spirit of the Aquarian age is, it's not going to be utopia. We're going to still struggle with tyrants and despots. There's still going to be that struggle, but the real evolution in human consciousness is going to be moving towards autonomy. And that's the thing that I feel like is so gracious about the potential for the Hermetic revolution, because that's what Hermeticism cultivates. That's what I think. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I totally agree that that's what Hermeticism cultivates and that we have that potential right now. But I think what it requires is each of us individually doing the work, you know, the alchemical work of transmuting these heavier, denser energies within ourselves. Yeah. And that can take a lifetime, you know? So I don't think it's going to be an overnight process, though maybe it could be. There are like explosive revolutions in consciousness that happen, and maybe we're on the verge of something like that. And, you know, that idea that if, you know, a great enough mass of people have an idea and it'll sort of explode into consciousness, and it could very well happen very quickly, but who knows?
Yeah.
And all I know is that all we really have control over is the individual level, you know, and working on ourselves and letting that radiance that comes through that work radiate outward and help other people and shine for other people. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think that's the basis of it all.
Yeah. The microcosm that you are.
Yeah.
Affects the macrocosm.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, we can really tap into the power of imagination, you know, not just for personal manifestation of things that we want to have or to be or to cultivate, but for the world, you know, and to hold a beautiful vision for the world. And I think the more of us that can do that, instead of focusing on all the negative things, because there's plenty of that, you know, just focus on the dreams and what we want to see, and to make space and time in our imaginative contemplations for, you know, positive fantasies for what could be.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. And I was thinking like about where your sun is in Sagittarius in the third decan. Mm-hmm. And I always have thought of that decan as, but I was raised Christian. So I'm very familiar with the Bible and Christian theology and the stories. And I always thought of the third decan of Sagittarius as being the John the Baptist decan. You know, it's the one that's proclaiming the coming of the birth of the sun. And so that's where your sun is. And so you have this quality of being able to proclaim what is coming and to see what is unfolding, a prophetic ability, in other words, but it's all for the good rather than the apocalypse. You are foreseeing some light that's being born in the world. And I could really feel that in the book. It's, and I'm not sure, it's actually not like, it's not a wild, mad prophet book at all. It's actually quite a deep work of scholarship. But I still felt this proclamation of the light that's returning, and it's in your artwork. So there's proof of it right there. It's in the way that you explore the planetary spheres, which I love, because I read about the planets, I write about the planets, I teach about the planets, and I like to go deep. And your book took me on a journey into the planetary influences that I found really original and really interesting. So it was really amazing to explore the planets through your eyes. And I feel like you make so many connections that I've never really seen made before. And so it's really original. And I recommend people read it just on that basis alone, just for learning more about the planets, taking a deep dive. One thing that I love that you do is that you bring in the mythology, which is traditional. It's very traditional. But reading like the myth of Medusa as a metaphor for separation, I love that, because this is like what I love to do. I love to interpret films and books and art and obviously mythology through the alchemical lens. And when you do so, it opens up all these deep layers of meaning that you could never have seen before. And it completely obliterates literalism, and it obliterates nihilism. And I just loved your interpretation of Mars and separation and Medusa. And I'm just curious. I know that you can't have a favorite planet. It's silly. It's like asking the favorite color, but what planet do you feel like you're kind of most influenced right now by? Like, what are you vibing with at the moment?
Well, currently, Saturn has been making himself very, very present for me in the physical world. A lot of physical stuff going on that relates directly to Saturn, you know, issues with my knees, root chakra stuff.
Yeah.
yeah. And so I feel that pretty heavy right now. And in a way, it's good, because it's helping me to focus on the things that are important and to stay grounded and to work on setting boundaries and to have more structure in my life and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. You know, it's just the basic stuff. And yeah. Sometimes it can get a little bit heavy. And the ways that I deal with that are just spending time in nature and creating and allowing that heavy energy to kind of just explode on the canvas and see what happens. And
I feel actually the same way. I'm very Saturnian right now. And it may simply be because we're both having our Saturn square. Saturn in Aquarius is not exactly right now, but has been squaring our natal Saturn. And that brings a confrontation with the Saturnian influence. And it's important to confront it. It's a necessary tick on the clock of human development. And I've been feeling the same way. I marked a lot of the Saturn stuff with bookmarks, not pen. I was very respectful of the book. But I'm going to just read this part really quick. You said, realizing the indestructibility of the soul is to transcend the Saturnian limitations of time and death, embodying the immortal self while accepting the body's dissolution. I love that you made that point. I've had the same revelation in that Saturn is always associated with just the contraction, just the negation, just the restriction. But Saturn is here to discipline us and focus our consciousness so that we can become strong enough to make the breakthrough, to actually break through space, time, and gravity. And we do that where? In our imagination, you know, and that's what Saturn in Aquarius specifically is really all about, is liberating the spirit from the confines of Saturn's realm, matter. And I love that you put that in there, because I do love Saturn. Ever since I've had this realization, I still feel the heaviness, yes, but I also feel the strength and the resolution to learn how to slowly over time break through and get actually beyond the confines. So in that way, I really, I understand what the very traditional astrologers are saying when they just dismiss the transpersonals, because they're like, we don't need them. And in a certain regard, we don't, because Uranus in modern astrology represents that breakthrough, that energy that's beyond that higher dimension. But Saturn still represents that as well, if you know the full story, if you know like the full impact of Saturn. So yeah, I loved your Saturn chapter a lot, because I've been really resonating with Saturn as well. I'm wearing black. I mean, it's,
yeah,
me.
Yeah. Help it.
Oh my God, I can't help it. Let's see. Well, there's so many things in this book. How can I even, let's see. I liked the small titles that you gave each planet, actually. Venus, the joy of creation. I really like that. It's so succinct and so very true. With the Venus in Scorpio, What is your relationship with Venus like now that you're, you know, like a fully realized artist and everything? I just want to hear your thoughts on Venus.
I've definitely gone through a lot with Venus and, you know, had very visceral experiences of going through that underworld journey with her, you know, like when she goes through her synodic cycle and she disappears for a time and then comes back as the morning star or the evening star.
Yeah.
So I felt very, very connected to her over the years. And I think through my processes of transformation and understanding, I've come to a really good place with Venus and come to understand the importance of cultivating beauty all around me in my living space and in my relationships and in my life, to kind of ameliorate those more heavy, you know, Venus and Scorpio energies that I have within me. And that when things are sort of orderly and beautiful and aesthetically harmonious and pleasing to the eye for me, like my mind and my heart and my soul, everything just feels so much better inside of me. And so I've just come to learn how important that is. And I also see it reflected in my relationships. You know, like I'm in probably the healthiest relationship I've ever had in my life at this moment. And that was after doing a lot of really deep Venus work and like praying to Venus and doing rituals around it. And I think, you know, all of the previous relationships were beautiful in their own way, but they were sort of helping to purify the heart, the realm of Venus, to prepare me for something that was actually healthy and mature and sustainable.
Wow. Congratulations. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Yes, that's amazing. You know, I would imagine Venus and Scorpio, it's like born for such deep intimacy, but that's so scary to people that... No, I think people are maybe more frightened of intimacy than death sometimes, you know? So that, yeah, I can imagine that would have been quite a journey, you know, quite a journey.
Yeah. There's a lot of intensity. Yeah.
Intensity is right. But it's so blissful once you find the intimacy that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I wanted to actually ask you about your art being displayed publicly, and you had gallery openings up in the Pacific Northwest, but now that you're in the desert, do you still have openings? Is your art for sale? Like, how do you work as an artist right now?
Well, my art is always for sale through my website. And I have prints of almost every piece available on my website as well. And I have not been showing in New Mexico since I've been out here. And mostly that's because I've been focused on writing. Wow. And I'm just sort of now opening back up to that. But I do have a show currently in Vienna. I'm not sure if they're currently open at the moment, but it's been this kind of ongoing show in Vienna. And I've got a couple pieces in that show.
Sweet.
And yeah, but you know, it's been really nice to take a break from having gallery shows because they just keep me so busy and it makes things really hectic. And for me, it's so valuable to just have space and time and not a lot of pressure on me in terms of like preparing for shows and stuff, to just really focus on the work itself.
Totally.
Yeah.
And do you have any upcoming projects related to perhaps more writing or maybe a class? Are you developing anything like that?
Well, I am formulating ideas for a third book. And as I mentioned previously, the second book comes out next year, which I'm very excited about. And I think you'll really, really love it. It goes even deeper into the alchemy and creativity, and it references a lot of art from romanticism and symbolism and surrealism, and sort of uses those as examples for how people have worked with alchemical principles and exemplified them through their work. I think you'll love it. But
I will. That's going to be dope.
Yeah. And I used to actually teach a class, which is part of how the book got started, and it was called Creative Alchemy, and it went through the four stages and related it to the creative process. And I'd like to bring that back. Previously, it was just a two-hour workshop, so I might start off with that just to kind of get in the groove of teaching again. And then I'd like to expand it into more of like a long-term workshop, maybe like over 4 weeks or something like that.
Oh, that sounds really cool. What would you be teaching, just for listeners who are curious or their interest is piqued?
Well, I think I would teach sort of the general theory that is in this book, Hermetic Philosophy and Creative Alchemy, theory regarding the Hermetic cosmogony and the various spheres, and how they relate to the chakras and the elements and the three principles. Yeah. And then what I would really want to get into is helping people understand how these alchemical processes can be utilized and integrated with the creative practice, and going through the four stages of the alchemical great work or magnum opus, and giving people different exercises and ways to work with these. And a lot of that material is in the second book. So it would be complementary to the books, you know, and kind of go a little bit deeper and be more experiential.
That sounds so cool. And do you have any idea when that might be available, just for people who want to keep tabs on that?
Probably next year.
Okay.
I have a lot of travel coming up. I'm going to Egypt, which I'm very excited about. Mm. And so I'll be formulating the class, you know, in my time at home, but then it probably won't be ready until next year. So
very cool.
I do have a newsletter, and that's where I announce anything like that I have going on. And you can also just go to my website. So,
okay. Awesome. And all of those links are in the liner notes for sure.
Great.
I'm assuming you're going to Egypt to connect with the origin of this wisdom. And are you going on like a specific tour or just for leisure? What's bringing you to Egypt?
I'm going as part of this alchemic mystery field school. And so we've been sort of doing these mystery school studies all summer, and it's very exciting, very wonderful, and very complimentary to everything that I've studied and learned. And the pilgrimage to Egypt is kind of the grand finale, and we're going to tour all of these sacred sites going all the way up the Nile, and there'll be rituals and different things that we do along the way. But
oh my god, that sounds so amazing. I hope all of you have a wonderful time. How many people are going?
I think it's about 15.
Wow, you guys, that sounds magnificent. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's been a dream for a long time, so it's very exciting that it's finally here. And it all came together very synchronistically, and especially like just after finishing the second book, you know, it's wonderful.
Yeah, oh my god, I'm really excited. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to your class. I love the idea of taking somebody else's creative alchemy class, because I've been teaching a version of this information for like 4 years now. And what's so strange, I mean, this is how it works though. Like I've always described, when you begin the alchemical work, waking life becomes a lucid dream.
Yes.
And I love that so much about it. So I hadn't taught it in, I guess, like a year. And I decided to turn it into, it's been, every time I've taught it, I've considered that to be another operation of alchemy. So I'm actually in the distillation process now. I've taught it six times. Mm-hmm. And so this is the sixth time. And I was like, I'm going to turn it into like a full video class, because it was just a text-based class, an audio class.
Yeah.
And when I started opening up registration for it, that's when Manzanita wrote me and said, hey, do you want to interview this author who wrote a book called Hermetic Philosophy and Creative Alchemy? And I was like, no way. What? Oh my God. So it's so exciting to meet you and to know that you're doing this work too, and in such a spectacular way. So I would love to take your class. I'm really looking forward to it. And also part two of the book, because using alchemy for art criticism is like my favorite subject. You know, it's kind of like how I've built my whole career, like using astrology, alchemy, and art, whether it's visual art or poetry or film or music, it doesn't really matter. I just like to read into art using this symbolic language, and it means so much to me. So I can't wait to read your book because I can't get enough of that. And right now I'm having the students in the class do the same thing, like find their own myths, stories, films, songs that relate to each of the levels. Yeah. And it's just like, it's so much fun. People are having such a good time. So yeah, your book sounds amazing. Your class sounds awesome. I will sign up for your newsletter personally. And if listeners would like to do that, you can go to Marlena, but you don't go by Marlena, right? You go by Seven.
I usually go by Seven. Yeah. I don't mind if people call me Marlena though.
Yeah. Seven. You can go to Seven's website and sign up. And did you give yourself that name?
Or I did. It was a chosen name. Probably back in 2013. Cool. I think it was like during my Saturn return and everything was changing. I was like moving to a new town and my cat died. A relationship ended after 5 years and it was like really tumultuous. And I just decided I'm going to move to a new town and start calling myself Seven and see what happens. And it's been an amazing change.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of deep meditation on the number Seven in your book, obviously.
It's such a crucial number in the Hermetic philosophy and everything. So
it's like the fabric of creation. Yeah. I love how you explored that. And I've always felt like I learned originally about Hermeticism from the rainbow when I was in kindergarten. We had this little song about the rainbow and I loved it so much. And after the song about the rainbow, I found this picture book called Rachel's Rainbow. And my name is Rachel. So I thought this book was like written for me. And it was all about this little girl who's gathering different things in nature that bear the colors of the rainbow. And once she gets them all together, they become a beautiful rainbow. And then the rainbow becomes white light once again. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, talk about understanding these principles when you're a small child. And when I started picking up Hermeticism in my 20s as well, I realized like, damn, that's how it is. It's the seven colors, the seven bands that refract from the one, the mind of the all. The white light is the mind of the all. The seven bands of color are the refraction of all of these different influences and energies that we work with, but ultimately they're all one again. And it's just so incredible. So I realized that, yeah, I understood this stuff as a child as well, but then forgot it and then came back to it because I went through a materialist phase myself. I rejected all things mystical for a short period of time because I was trying to do some kind of separation. I was trying to purify myself of religious dogma. And also I was really falling for the academic cell. I was falling for the academic vibe. And I was like, none of these people believe in astrology. They all think this is nonsense. So I tried to adopt that attitude and I did for a short time, but it didn't stick. You know, it was a very interesting experiment. And when I came back onto the other side, I was way more open, way more inspired, way more heartfelt and soulful about my interest in these things. So it was a very important journey for me, but I did kind of like know and then forget and then remember again. So I feel like that's a common enough narrative, right?
Like, I think so. I have my own version of that.
Oh my God. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share about this book or the creation of this book or any other story that you'd like to tell?
Well, I'd just like to say that I know that this is kind of a hefty book, and that for some people it might be a lot. You know, if someone's just being introduced to these ideas and they have no background in any of it, it might be a lot. So don't take it as like a be-all end-all of the subject. It's not a sole volume of information. Like, expand your studies. If there's something that you don't quite get, like, look into it, research it, find more information on it. Mm-hmm. And above all, like, experience this stuff for yourself. Don't take my word for it. You know, if there's something in there, like, don't just believe it because I wrote it in there, but see if it rings true for you, feel into it and see if it resonates, and experiment with these ideas and see if they work for you.
Very well said. Very, very true. And always true of every book that you read. Thank you. Thank you. And yeah, I will second that this book is dense. It's not what we would call a beginner's primer, but at the same time, you don't have to understand every reference to get a lot out of it. And yeah, it does inspire a tremendous amount of other study, and it will pique your curiosity. There's so much in here that even if this is a fairly new subject to you, I would still recommend it, because something in it will touch you. Something in it will draw interest out. And then the second time you read it, it will make a lot more sense. And it is like very, very dense. And I will emphasize that, but it's good. It's good that it's dense. That means that you have provided a rich amount of experience, a rich amount of knowledge. And so it doesn't feel like one-dimensional or dogmatic, or it doesn't seem, in my opinion, it didn't seem to have any kind of preachiness or agenda. It's really kind of, it's like a fractal wave, you know, it takes you on a lot of different trips, a lot of different journeys. It's very, very much in motion. I guess the mutable fire that you have so much of really presents itself in here. It's dancing and in motion, and it goes into a lot of different directions. Very prismatic. So yeah, I highly recommend this book. It's quite a trip. It's a beautiful journey, and the art is also exquisite. So I do really recommend getting the hard copy. And I know that that's hard now, but there are books that are meant to be touched and experienced, and there is beautiful illustrations in this. So it's a totally sensorial pleasure to have this book and hold this book. And yeah, thank you so much, Seven, for coming onto my podcast. It's been such a pleasure getting to meet you.
It's been a great pleasure, Rachel. Thank you so much for all of your kind words.
Oh my God. Yeah. I hope you have a wonderful time in Egypt, and maybe you can come on when the second book comes out. What do you think?
I would love that.
Okay, right on. So I will talk to you again for sure when your second book comes out, and I really look forward to that. So thank you again. Have a beautiful time. Take care.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.